Okay, so this is the disputed poster. Now, one at a time, I want you to express your feelings using I emotion language and no judging or you statements.
I got this poster for Christmas, and I feel I want to see it every day. It makes me feel like the babies are the true artists, and God has a really cute sense of humor.
Come on, seriously, that?
I don't like looking at it. It's creepy and in bad taste, and it's just offensive to me. It makes me think of the horrible, frigid stage mothers who forced the babies into it. It's kitsch. It's the opposite of art. It destroys art. It destroys souls. This is so much more offensive to me than hardcore porno.
Okay, stop. Let's see if we can't just brainstorm and find some creative alternatives that are win-win.
Win.
Yes, thank you, Pam. How about Angela makes the poster into a t-shirt which Oscar wears? That way he can never see it, and whenever she looks at Oscar, she can see it. Win, win, win.
No.
That's no.
Okay, well, brainstorm. Own the solution.
How about I leave it up?
How about she takes it down?
How about Angela can keep it up on Tuesdays and Thursdays?
Okay, that is called a compromise, and it is style 3, and it is not ideal. To sum up, win-win, make the poster in a t-shirt. Win-lose, take the poster down, compromise Tuesdays and Thursdays, and the answer is make the poster into a t-shirt. Win-win.
Win.
Fine.
But
it is done.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, episode 41. Owen, who? Owen finally got a win. The Giants are 1-5. Shout out to that sexy silver fox, Mike Sullivan. And shout out to Skype for making this episode 2 days late. Before we get into everything, before I introduce the guest, you know the drill. We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first, follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. You can follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Go follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're on iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio. You have no excuse not to be subscribed at this point. And I'm going to throw in a little extra caveat to the end of my subscribe rant. I'm sure many of you have friends. At least I hope so. Hopefully those friends are Giants fans. I want you this week, this weekend, when you're out at the bar, I want you to go up to that friend and say, hey, I know this really good Giants podcast called NYG Weekly. You should subscribe to them on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, Google Play, whatever device you have. Rate them 5 stars. Give them a nice review because we're trying to hit a milestone, folks. And we're going to hit it during the bye week, but I want to hit it faster. So get a friend to subscribe. We'll love you forever. We're going to have some giveaways coming up. So make sure you do that. All right. Let's get into it. Weiss, we have a guest this week. Shout out to you, James. We got James Cratch, NJ.com. You can follow him on Twitter at James Cratch. That's K-R-A-T-C-H. Go follow him if you're not already. James, welcome. Thank you for joining us, especially after Tuesday's technical difficulties.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you for having me. Big moment. I think my partner, Dan Duggan, has been on a couple of times, and now I'm here. So
perfect.
Took a little while with the Skype thing, but we're here.
Yeah, Dan's been on a few times. We got to get the other half, the better half. Don't tell Dan we said that. and I'm totally joking. Love you guys equally. So let's get into it. The Giants got their first win this week. I think we're going to open up with some more specific questions to you, James, just because okay. You know, we want your input as a member of the media, someone who's around the team, someone who's around the coaches. Let's start with play calling, because there were some rumblings earlier in the week that there was a, you know, a little nod that came down from ownership that basically told Ben McAdoo to give up the play calling duties, and that he did. Went to Mike Sullivan. The Giants win their first game of the season. And then John Mara comes out during the owners meeting and says that that is absolutely not the case. So let's start with that. What's your take on it? What do you believe to be true? And is this something that we can continue to see going forward where Mike Sullivan is the exclusive play caller?
Yes. Yes, I think that Sullivan is going to call the plays, I would assume, for the rest of the season. I can't see how they can change it at this point. I mean, we've basically been doing this for almost, you know, over a year now. You know, people have been saying McAdoo needs to give up the play calling. He finally gave it up. They win the game. The offense wasn't great. I mean, I think the fact they won has kind of made it look better. I mean, they still only scored 16 points, but I think Sullivan calls the plays. I don't think John Mara came to Ben McAdoo and said, you must stop calling the plays or else. I don't think that conversation happened. So in that sense, I think he's, you know, that's he's correct. He's telling the truth. I do think, though, that I'm sure that ownership has discussed this with McAdoo, and maybe not specifically right this past week when he decided to go for the play calling, but I'm sure in the past, and I'm sure they've kind of pointed out the pros and the cons, and I'm sure that maybe they made it, they had an opinion, and McAdoo had an opinion, and they kind of made sure that McAdoo understood what their opinion is. So I don't think there was ever a specific meeting, and I think that obviously if you saw what Ben said, Ben is adamant he made the decision himself. Right.
So you must give up the play calling, but a nudge. Hey, you know, it would
but I'm
be,
sure,
it would be
hey,
cool
have
if,
you thought about
know,
giving
yeah.
up the play calling right. thing? You know, so that's why I think happened at the end of the day is I'm sure that and I'm not saying it may have been, hey, have you thought about doing this in week three? Because, you know, that's when they should have I mean, they should have been having a conversation if there ever was a conversation after the second game, because you were 0-2. Season's on the ropes going to Philly. The offense is non-functional. That's when the conversation should have been had. And maybe it was, and maybe it happened earlier then or a little bit after then, but I don't think there was ever a meeting where they basically threatened him that he had to give up the play calling. But I'm sure that at some point they presented an argument for why he might want to.
Interesting dilemma. But I think the other big cloud in the room obviously was the whole DRC situation. So you were there, obviously everyone has their opinions, but I personally think the suspension was warranted, but I think for me this was just a sign of him losing the locker room. Do you get the sense of that when you talk to the players when you're in the locker room? I just wanted to see what your opinion on that was.
No, and I see where that kind of came from. I mean, look, I think the DRC situation was complicated, and I mean, it's kind of over now, but it was because it was almost two separate things. You're absolutely right. And I think the players in that locker room would agree, the ones at least I spoke to, when he storms out of the building, like that's something, you know, like if you walk out of your job, any of us, we're probably going to get disciplined, suspended, fired, whatever. I think that him walking out of the building, going AWOL, everyone realized that's something that the head coach is going to have to put his foot down on and going to have to suspend him, and that's not right, and you can't – I think they totally get that. The issue was what transpired to get to the point where McAdoo said, you're going to be inactive for the Denver game. Because that's why DRC got upset, and he admits he, you know, blew his top or whatever. He stormed out. It was why that was the cause of the suspension. He was suspended because he walked out, but he was angry because of the fact that he was going to be inactive. That's kind of the thing I think that's a little bit more complex. Still a bit hazy. I mean, we know the details, but we don't know all the details, and the details have kind of changed when you talk to various people. I don't think he's lost the locker room. I do feel that when he's suspended DRC, I think there was kind of – and then he took 3 days to discuss the suspension with the team. I think there was a sense of, like, why is this guy not telling us, you know, something that we clearly want to know? Like, why is he not engaging and communicating with us? And I think in that sense, you could feel something kind of turn where guys are like, you know, what's this guy doing? But obviously, I think the win in Denver kind of, you know, helps that situation, and they played hard for him. So I don't think he's lost the locker room, and I don't think last week I wouldn't have even said he lost the locker room. I just think that there was a little bit of confusion and kind of doubt that kind of maybe seeped in with some guys, and I think the fact that they won the game makes it better. The fact that DRC has come back and basically as you guys saw, he was candid, contrite, hilarious. You know, he was DRC, took full right. responsibility, and they've kind of moved on. But, you know, I think it's something to monitor, because it's not like this is week 15. know, this is, you know, there's 10 games left in the season, and a lot of things could happen still in that situation, especially when you're a team that, you know, in all likelihood, you're not going anywhere. So I wouldn't say he's lost the locker room. I think that it's probably better than it was last week. I just think that there was a sense of he was starting to kind of, you could see the path to losing it kind of appear for the first time in front of you when there was kind of that, you know, mayhem around the DRC situation.
Yeah, I think, you know, the win obviously cures it all, or cures some of it. But to me, I think the big thing with Ben McAdoo is the inconsistencies when it comes to how he's reacting to certain things from certain players. Obviously, you know, I totally understand why DRC was suspended. But you look at other incidents surrounding this team and you look at the way he's reacted, whether it was, you know, the situation with the reporter and Eric Flowers after the Green Bay game last year, whether it's the way he sort of responded to some of the Odell Beckham stuff. If I was a player in that locker room and I see that, I'm sort of kind of like, you know, what's inconsistencies here? That could be all a part of some resentment that players have toward McAdoo eventually, if they don't have already. So I just wanted to elaborate what I meant when I said, is there any chance that players are kind of picking up on this or kind of seeing this as, hey, why is this so-and-so getting treated differently than such-and-such per se?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think that's definitely something that's been kind of brought up by some players and been mentioned by media guys like me. I mean, I think anyone who's played sports, I think, knows that there are a lot of coaches out there who they've got two sets of rules. They've got a set of rules for, you know, the majority of the guys on the team or gals on the team, and they've got a second set of rules like for the players they really need. And I feel like sometimes it even goes beyond that with the Giants. It can feel like that, you know, McAdoo has this saying that he's consistent and he treats everyone differently. And I get that. I think he's saying it to the point of, you know, because I've written this before, but, you know, his whole background is in education. You know, he basically was studying, you know, if Ben McAdoo wasn't a head coach in the NFL, I think he would be, you know, a phys ed teacher somewhere, you know, coaching high school football. And I think that kind of gets to like differentiated learning, and, you know, you can't teach everyone the same. But I do feel like, you know, you're right. There can be this perception of it's almost like there's 53 sets of rules and it kind of shifts. And, you know, this guy does this and there's no punishment, but then this guy does this. You know, I mean, and it's not just discipline. I mean, it's the whole idea of like, you know, he went hard after Eli earlier in the year in the press conference. But, you know, he says Eric Flowers is making progress after he gave up three sacks. Or, you know, you know, he won't, you know. You know, he won't say that, you know, this guy has been benched, but then he'll say that, you know, this guy has been benched. And, you know, I just think you're absolutely right. I think that's definitely a thing, and that's something he's got to be, you know, mindful of. I think Ben McAdoo is a second-year head coach who's had a season kind of go drastically away from where everyone dreamed it would go. I think he's working through some things. And now the big test over the next 10 weeks is going to be, how successful is he at working through these things and then moving forward after that?
I mean, I think it's sort of twofold, right? There's one where, it's how he sort of treats players differently based on an individual basis. But you can look towards the Eric Flowers issue with Jordan Ron on last year. You can look towards how he's handled Eli versus Odell versus this DRC situation. You can look towards Eli Apple's comments a couple weeks ago, Janoris Jenkins leaving the game early, although he allegedly thought the game was over. And you can even look towards JPP's comments towards Jerry Reese a couple weeks ago, where he was asked, you know, what's wrong with this team? And he goes, I don't know, ask the general manager. My question is, and I think we all unfortunately know the answer, at least for Weiss and myself, it's unfortunate because we'd like to see some management and coaching changes. But what are the likelihood of changes? And I think, honestly, going in last week, going into Denver's 13-point underdogs and coming out with a pretty nice win was one of the worst things that could happen, because let's not get it twisted. This team has a lot of holes, both on the coaching staff, on the roster, and, you know, firing Ben McAdoo during the bye week isn't going to save the season, and firing Jerry Reese isn't going to do much. But it at least gives them extra time, in my opinion, to go out there and see, hey, maybe we have a future coach on, you know, somewhere on the coaching staff. Maybe someone inside the organization on the scout team, you know, maybe they can get a chance to interview for the general manager position once the season's over. Because listen, it's a lost season. You might as well take advantage of that at this point in time. And, you know, Seahawks coming across country, banged up offensive line. There's a decent chance, honestly, the Giants could be 2-5 going into the bye. Not a great look considering it's a lost season. We know changes need to be made, and it could be used as an excuse by John Mara to stay put and, you know, do things the Giant way.
Yeah, I don't think there's any chance they make anything in season. I think that it would be a little bit different. I'll be honest with you. Like, if they had gone out to Denver and lost like 38-0, I would have said, like, I still wouldn't have thought it would be likely, but I would have said, yeah, you know, I mean, there's anything could happen right at this point. Now, I don't think it's going to happen. And at the end of the year, I mean, look, I think it's too early to tell. I don't think anything's going to happen for a couple of reasons. I think one, John Mara believes in Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo. And I am aware that a lot of the fans may not, but he does. And Steve Tisch does. And I think that goes a long way. Two, I mean, Ben McAdoo signed a 4-year deal when he got hired. The Giants I don't think they're going to be terribly interested in paying him 2 years worth of buyout money to not work for them. I think it's also the whole idea of, you know, and Giants fans especially will not like, who aren't really high on the general manager, is it's really difficult in the NFL to get rid of a general manager and then hire a guy and basically have a head coach in place.
Right.
I mean, I just think it's a difficult situation.
If you fire the GM, you're firing the coach in essence.
Exactly. And I think – so basically the Giants at that point, I think, are at the point where they can't really half measure it anymore like they did 2 years ago when Tom Coughlin left and Jerry Reese stayed. You either get rid of everybody or you keep everybody. And I think that at this point I would say there's a 90% chance, probably even higher, but I'll say 90, that they're going to keep everybody. Because I do think the Giants – you're absolutely right.
Gross.
They could win on Sunday and they could be 2-5 going to the bye. You know, the drums of optimism will start to bang, and they'll say, well, if we beat the Rams at home and we beat the 49ers in Santa Clara, we're 4-5 with the Chiefs coming here, and who knows what could happen. So, but I think at the same time, if you lose this game, you're 1-6. And I think Giants fans should take heart in what John Mara said at the owners' meeting the other day, where he said, yeah, we're 1-5 instead of 0-6. Like, they're not believing that this is like this big season-changing win. I mean, they won a game, and it's great. Everyone feels good, and it was an impressive performance given all the circumstances that they were under. But they're still not really going anywhere, and I think that if they were to win this week, there'd be a little bit more of a sense of optimism. But if they lose, they're right back where they started, and I think the final 9 games will be that sort of referendum on the whole organizational, you know, power structure that I think a lot of fans are looking for.
Yeah, and, you know, Weiss, before we get into the Denver game, at the end of the day, you know, they win at the bye, and they're 2-5. You're right. The drums of optimism start beating, mostly from a small part of the fan base, but I think mostly from John Mara, Jerry Reese, because you know those press conferences before the bye, they're going to say, you know, we've started to do good things. You know, it's unfortunate we got off to this rocky start, but we're doing good things, and totally try to cloud fans' visions of the fact that this was supposed to be a Super Bowl contender. And now sitting at 1-5, potentially 1-6, maybe 2-5, that this season is effectively over and that they've wasted one of the last years of Eli Manning.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Fans cannot leave, you know, lose sight of that. I mean, I think there has already become like a little bit of revisionist history. Like, no, like this team, it was not just the media that put Super Bowl expectations on the Giants.
The team put
the Giants went out and did it themselves. And now they have it add up. And I think, look, in hindsight, I think you can look and say, okay, well, we knew the offensive line was an issue, and they, you know, the linebacking core, maybe they got lucky last year that, you know, all those guys had a career year together, and, you know, and obviously this and that, but they brought this upon themselves. They set the bar high. They haven't come close to matching it. And you're right. If they get to 2-5, it'll probably be a different story. I'm intrigued to see what their message will be at 1-6, and I do think that the Seahawks will win on Sunday. You know, what are they going to kind of spin? Because at 1-6, there's really nothing. There's no – you can't even hang your hat on something.
Right.
You know, it's just kind of like, all right, there's 9 games left in the season. Got to go play them. So it'll be something to watch, definitely. And I think Sunday is going to be kind of a big pivot point for the Giants, which direction they go heading into the bye.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talk about the Denver game, and I think we'll sort of dive into that. I don't even want to discuss what you just said, James, because that just made me sick to my stomach. I mean, just hearing the notion that 90% they could be back, I mean, that will just kill me.
But it's where it's at. I mean, I think that it's going to be one of those situations where if change comes, it's going to come like – you're not going to see it coming until like week 16, week 17. Go back to 2015. I mean, there was a thought that Tom could hang on until I think week 15. I think the Norman Beckham game was kind of like, okay, a change is probably coming. So you never know. I do think they'll be back, both of them, but I mean, that could change. But I think it'll be very late in the game when we might realize that, hey, something could happen here.
Yeah, I think, listen, when it comes to the head coach, McAdoo, year two, we could debate that about whether he deserves another year all day. But my thing is, I mean, with Jerry, and I've been a supporter for Jerry for some time now, but, I mean, this is 11 years, and every year it seems like, you know, Giants take a step forward. I mean, you look at his record since the Super Bowl. He hasn't drafted well. He hit on free agents last year, but other than last year, there hasn't been an offseason where you could say, wow, that was a great offseason for Jerry since that, you know, Super Bowl team. But for me, it just comes down to the fact that, you know, all these moves the Giants have made over the last 2 years, 3 years have been to benefit Eli Manning. And if you're in a position where you could grab a franchise quarterback, you know, if you have a top 5 pick, a top 10 pick, why not just start fresh? With a new GM, with a new, you know, and let that GM decide if it's time to go in a different direction with in terms of the head coaching. But, you know, again, that's something we'll table till the end of the year. They still have 10 games to play. But that's just my opinion on it. And I'll let you finish it off.
I was going to say one quick thing on that note. I think you're definitely right. I do think that if this team starts losing a bunch of games again and they are going to be like a 2 or 3 win team and they're going to have the number one, number two. No, I don't think the Giants get the number one overall pick. I think Cleveland is just, their schedule is so difficult and they're just not any good in the quarterback mess they have. But I do think, you know, getting a second or third pick is realistic for this Giants team. If they don't really turn around, I think you're absolutely right. You have, as an ownership, you need to sit down and have that conversation of one, are we going to draft a quarterback? And then two, okay, we're going to draft a quarterback, because I do think they can do it. I think they draft a quarterback. Eli is the starter in 2018, and then everything's on the table in 2019.
Yeah, all right,
we're absolutely going to draft a quarterback. Are we going to have – is Ben McAdoo the guy that we want to bring this quarterback along? Because I think drafting Sam Darnold with the number 2 overall pick or Mason Rudolph or Josh Rosen or whoever, Lamar Jackson – and then having him play 1 year with McAdoo and saying, you know what, second thought, we want a new head coach. I mean, then that kid's going into a different system in year two. And I mean, it's worked for Goff, because I think Goff was moved into a much better system.
Yes.
But, you know, it could also kind of stunt that quarterback's growth. So I think that's a big challenge. You know, if you get that high of a pick, one, are we taking quarterback? And two, if we're taking a quarterback, are these the guys we want in place? Look at what Philly did. They built a quarterback support system around Carson Wentz, and he looks like a guy who might be a Pro Bowler and could be the guy that takes him to a Super Bowl someday and wins it. And I think the Giants have
to
kind of look at that.
Much to our chagrin.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing the Giants have to think about. I don't think Kirk Cousins is going to be back with the Redskins, but if he is, you're in a division with 3 20-something quarterbacks who have, assuming the Eagles win the division this year, have all won the NFC East already in their careers. And you've got a guy who's 37. So, you know, I think that's something the Giants have definitely to think about.
And not only do those three teams have a quarterback in the 20s, but they also have a very good offensive line as well. And, you know, that's what you need. And that's what the Giants don't have right now. But as we focus in on the Denver game, the positive, obviously the way the offensive line played, for me, it was a game that I can't explain. I don't know how the Giants won that game. I mean, everyone's saying, you know, it was a quote from Shannon Sharp that I like, that I liked. He said, Denver came into that game worrying about the players that weren't playing versus the players that were. And Orleans Darkwa had an amazing game. Obviously broke off that 47-yard run. You know, Mike Sullivan took over play calling. They did a good job running the football. Eli's pass attempts were down. And we saw flashes from Evan Engram. The defense finally, you know, got a couple of picks, got a touchdown. But I thought that this is what they needed to do versus Denver and Trevor Siemian. He's not a quarterback that can play from behind. If you look at the way Denver's built, you know, they run the football and they sort of limit the amount of attempts Trevor Siemian can make. Well, Giants go out to a 10-point lead, 17-3 lead. You know, Trevor Siemian has to throw the ball, and that's something that's not what he does, not what he's good at. He's not that good. And, you know, but this notion that they're some team that's going to, you know, win 4 or 5 in a row, I mean, that's no way, no way. They completed 2 pass attempts to receivers that I think went for 23 yards, 24 yards. That's not a recipe to win in this league.
It's not sustainable.
You're not facing Trevor Siemian every single week.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's not sustainable. I think that, you know, you're right. The 2 passes, I mean, it scored 16 points. I mean, maybe the defense could play that way. Although I will say this, I think if the Giants play a bad quarterback, that they tend to make some hay. And I think they kind of face that in Denver. You're not getting that against Russell Wilson on Sunday.
No way.
Goff, I mean, take your pick. Niners, okay, fine. But then Alex Smith, Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr, Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott. I mean, they're going to play some really good quarterbacks in the second half of the season. Yeah, I think it was a great win for them. Super impressive win. I just don't think any of it's really going to translate over. Just because the run game, I think they blocked really well, but I still think you see some issues with the offensive line. I think one of the biggest things they had was, go back to the play calling, which you discussed earlier. That was a game where if Ben McAdoo was calling the plays, they probably would have abandoned the run at some point.
Absolutely.
Mike Sullivan didn't do that, and I think that's a big reason why they were able to kind of keep chipping away. Now, look, that offensive line, I had talked to DJ Fluker, and I didn't have my recorder on. I was just kind of talking to him. He is the most fired up man in New Jersey right now.
And he better be.
He is just – and I think that's sort of infectious, like that attitude of – if the Giants could run the ball every play – that offensive line would sign up for it right now. Now, you can't do that. And I do think that the one saving grace that the Giants have is if you get Sterling Shepard back, you still feature Evan Engram, and you really need to get Shepard back healthy. It seems like he might play Sunday.
I would hold him out till after
the bye. Out of the Giants, I would hold him and let him come back just because if he gets hurt again, from this point forward, teams are just going to double Evan Engram.
Yep.
And then you're forcing Travis. And I think Tavares King and Roger Lewis, they've made plays in the past. I think they can make plays, but you can't be going to them as like the number one option. They've got to be guys who are, you know. So I think that's the big key is they got to get Shepard back on the field and they got to be careful with him. Because if he's out there, I think maybe you can do a little bit more, you know, kind of work. You know, if you have Engram out there and Shepard, you can, you know, maybe get Red Ellison involved a little bit. You thought he was going to be a pass catcher in training camp. Jarrell Adams, I think, has some raw ability, kind of, you know, get him out there. Maybe you make some moves, you know, with TK and Lewis. But I think if you don't get Shepard back or he comes back and he gets hurt again as you rush him, you're really in a bad shape. I do think the receiving core can improve as the weeks go along and they get more in the swing of things. But right now, I just don't see how that the way they won in Denver is going to work going forward.
I mean, it's lunacy in a sense. You guys hit on finally sticking to the run as if it was like some foreign concept for Ben McAdoo. Mike Sullivan just does one of the most simple, old school ground and pound options. And it worked. And it worked against one of the best defensive fronts. The lunacy that I'm referring to is you drafted Evan Engram, 23rd, as this insane pass catcher. He's 4 inches taller than Odell Beckham Jr., ran the same 40 time. He's brought in here to expose linebackers, bust open the cover two defense. And it took until the entire receiving core died to really feature this guy in the passing game. And he excelled. And it's like people are surprised. It's crazy that it took this long for him to be involved. And I think the pace that he's on, he wasn't really that heavily involved in the passing game the first few weeks. Literally, after this game, he's on pace to have the best season by a rookie tight end ever. After being featured, which should have been happening a long time ago.
Yeah, I think he was on pace to kind of have a normal, like, that was the thing. Like, you know, I think fans got very excited. I think a lot of people, like, you know, myself included,
right,
kind of like, you know, tempering the expectations just because
it's such a hard position tight ends to learn.
They don't necessarily have big numbers. And now it's out of necessity. I mean, that's kind of the thing for the Giants. I think there's a lot of what ifs this week. Darkwa has been a what if since 2015. You know, finally, you know, it took this for this guy to have this workload. I think that when the inevitable Tavares King, you know, 5 catches, 80-yard, 2-touchdown game comes, people are going to go, I mean, why, like, this guy caught a touchdown pass in a playoff game.
The Jarrell Jernigan effect.
Exactly. Yeah. So I just think it is kind of humorous that in a Giants state at 1-5 with all these injuries, that McAdoo's given up the play calling. Darkwood has ran for 100 yards. Ingram had a big game. You know, a guy like Tavares King might soon have a big game. No, I think you're right. I think that they were like the Ingram pick to me. I criticize at the time, not because I don't think Evan Ingram is going to be a good player. I think he could be a great player. It was just that I didn't understand where he fit in the whole Giant universe of,
right,
you've got Brandon Marshall, you got Odell, you got Shepard, you can't run the ball. You could have went up and gotten O.J. Howard, but you didn't. So now you got this guy who, look, he's never really going to block. I mean, I think he busts his butt and he tries to block. And I think he's a better blocker in a sense that, like, you know, he actually is making an effort to block. But he's never going to be a guy who's in line who's going to, you know, mash on someone. So that was what I didn't understand about the pick. Now I see what he can do, but you're right. If you're going to draft that guy, you need to actually let him use his skill set and be a mismatch weapon. And it seems like it wasn't until Sunday night they finally allowed him to do that.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, he wasn't the only young guy that shined. Darian Thompson had a good game. Eli Apple finally learned to turn his head around, which is big.
Yeah, really good game.
Really good game.
You know, another person that got a good game and probably made himself a lot of money? Justin Pugh.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Uh-huh. And Weiss, you know, this is, you know, I'm not famous enough to have old takes exposed, go through my old tweets, but I think it was like 2 weeks ago where I was talking about how I thought it was more likely that they re-signed Richburg because of money. Brett Jones, baby. I mean, listen, lock up Justin Pugh and throw away the key, throw however much money that guy wants at him, and that's it. Back the Brinks truck up, because he is proving. And listen, I feel like a lot of people are not going to like this comparison, but in my eyes, he's like the David Deal of this generation, where he can play a number of positions and play them well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I do think that, and I'm kind of worried on something on this later in the week. It's kind of shifted, and I think that, you don't want to look too forward, but the Giants, their offensive line is going to have an overhaul in this coming off season.
Right.
And I think you've got to be very careful about, you want to accomplish something, but you don't want to have to completely accomplish it, overhaul. I know that, like, the Vikings did it, but it's very hard to just turn over 5 offensive line spots in an off season if you're not going to spend big money. Right. And I don't think the Giants really can do that. So this whole idea of, you know, fantasy fans let Pugh walk. And I mean, okay, You let Pugh walk. Well, how are you going to replace him?
Yeah. I mean, the line just gets significantly worse without him. And you don't, I mean, listen, the line needs a total overhaul. But, you know, if you re-sign Justin Pugh, you spend a first, second round pick on another tackle, you can go out there and get, you know, a competent guard or two. You know, it doesn't need to be this, like, entire overhaul and become the Dallas Cowboys overnight, but you can pull a Vikings pretty successfully if you draft well.
Definitely. I think that's going to be a big thing too. is, are you going to keep Pugh at right tackle? Are you going to say, hey, maybe he can play left tackle? Are you going to? I think he's best at left guard. So if I were the Giants, I would pay him the money it takes to re-sign him. And I would say, in a, we're going to ideally have him at left guard. Let's go get two tackles. I would assume right now one of the tackles is Eric Flowers next year, just basically you can't save any cap space. He's guaranteed money. You got to keep him. I just think the big thing for me is that I don't know for sure that Eric Flowers if a move to the right tackle or a guard spot, which I don't think is as likely. I don't know if that would make him a better player, but I know people say he's doing better, and I personally, I think what Sean O'Hara said a couple weeks ago had a lot of truth, where it's just like to just say, well, you know what, no one destroyed the game, so you know, he's, I mean, you watch a couple of plays from Sunday night. I mean, there's some blatant holds he got away with. You know, there was a run play to the outside where he just didn't hit anybody. They don't really run to his side anymore. So,
And I think this is something that Weiss can agree on as well. Like, if this is going to be a lost season, and you brought it up, like you think he's going to be a tackle next year. I don't know if he's going to be a tackle next year. I definitely think he's got a spot on the line just because, well, money. But if it's a lost season, you might as well try him at right tackle, at left guard, and just see if he can excel, or not even excel, just not be a liability elsewhere. Because if he can show that, then you can go out there and sign a competent left tackle.
Just because I look at him, I mean, in a way, DJ Fluker could be a look into Eric Flowers' future.
I've said the exact same thing when they signed him. He is staring right into the mirror.
Because, you know, okay, let's say the Giants move him to right tackle next year, okay? I don't know if the Giants are going to pick up his fifth-year option. It's tough. Normally I would say yes, just because, you know, as long as a guy doesn't get hurt, and offensive linemen usually don't suffer serious injuries, you know, you hope. You know, as long as a guy doesn't get hurt, it's very easy. I mean, Abba DJ Fluker, you just cut the guy before the new league year starts. Everything comes off the books and no issues. I do think, though, I mean, Eric Flowers' fifth year option is probably going to be much higher than DJ Fluker's. And the Giants might say, you know, we don't want to have, you know, $13 million guaranteed for injury if we don't know if we want this guy going forward. But, you know, if they move Flowers but don't do anything with this year, and it doesn't look like they're going to do anything with him, you can get a situation where Flowers can have one offseason program, one training camp, and then one season in his new position. And then depending on how he does, he might be hitting the free agent market, and he might be like DJ Fluker, basically taking a one-year, $3 million prove-it deal to some, you know, to the go play for the Bengals, and not a lot of it's guaranteed, and he's fighting for a starting spot. And look, it seems to be working for DJ Fluker here, and maybe he's a guy who can re-sign next year, you know, and be one line. But, you know, DJ Fluker wasn't playing for the first couple of weeks. It can go the other way, where all of a sudden Eric Flowers, you know, is at a new team, or he's here, doesn't play much, and there's not a spot for him. I mean, that happens to guys where they just kind of peter out of the league. So I think that's something that Eric Flowers, I mean, the Giants, I don't want to say they owe it to him, but it would be in their best interest if this thing really gets out of hand to say, well, let's give them a look at these positions just to kind of get some tape on it before we move into the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, this is the one thing that I sort of talked about earlier podcast was, I mean, last offseason, you know, you didn't even, you know, try to put Eric Flowers in other spots on the line just for like a doomsday scenario. And I don't want to sit here and say that it's Eric Flowers' fault that the Giants are 1-5 or 0-4, 0-5. But my thing is test out these different, you know, offensive line combinations just in case, hey, if something happens, we can, you know, if Eric Flowers doesn't work out left tackle, we can move him here and, you know, it will be serviceable. They didn't even do any of that. And now you're basically, like you guys said, you're just stuck with them at left tackle for this year. Although it won't be, it's not something that it would make sense to try to move him around, see if he fits. But then next offseason, you know, obviously he has the guaranteed fourth year. You know, you can't cut him because there's no, you know, you don't get anything back. But try and see if he can be a guard, a serviceable guard. Try and see if he can be a right tackle. I think that's the likelihood of where this thing is headed. But James, you're on the money. They can't build the Dallas Cowboy offensive line in 1 year. They're going to have to find a spot for Flowers. And if they don't, then they're basically going to have to send him down and hope the guy behind him can beat him out for a job. But, you know, I agree. I think when it comes to Flowers, you got to try and see if you can fit him somewhere on the line. And with Justin Pugh, you're going to have to pay him and then, again, see where you can put him. Maybe he's a left tackle. Maybe you stick him at guard. Maybe he stays at right tackle. But I think a major overhaul is coming for the Giant offensive line. I think we can agree on that.
Definitely. I think it's about the draft and free agency. It might be some, you know, guy like Chad Wheeler stepping up. But look, they got it's going well now, but I'm telling you, and it might be this Sunday against the Seahawks defense. They're going to be exposed again at some point. And I think it's something that they definitely have to address in the offseason. And I can't see how they don't after neglecting it this year. And now they're sitting here at 1-5.
Well, I said that last year, but.
Yeah. I mean, no, it's, I think we've said the last couple of years, I mean, the fans and the people who cover the team, but they gambled and right now it looks like they gambled way wrong.
Yeah, but the one thing is about the offensive line, what makes me so angry about it, right, is that you didn't make changes because you didn't feel as though, you know, there was anyone out there that could make you better. We can debate that, but okay. But they didn't even try to go out and draft any. Like, they drafted Bisnawati in the sixth round. They trade up for him, then they cut him, and now he's on the practice squad. But they haven't drafted an offensive lineman since, you know, outside of Bobby Hart and Eric Flowers. I mean, they don't have anybody sitting back there that they can bring in where it's like, okay, maybe, you know, after a year or 2 years of his development, maybe he can be a guy. Like, they don't have anybody, you know, behind Eric Flowers at tackle outside of Bobby Hart and Chad Wheeler. And it's just mind-boggling to me how you can just be that stubborn about this whole thing. Like, you didn't even really try to improve the offensive line until, you know, the sixth round of the draft. I mean, it just boggles my mind how they allowed this to happen. And again, I don't want to make this whole episode about the offensive line, but just insane how incompetent, you know, the front office has been with rebuilding this offensive line.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't say any better. They made major miscalculations and it makes no sense. And but hey, Jerry Reese is going to speak at some point after, you know, before or after the bye week, and he'll definitely get asked questions about it. So that should be interesting
for sure. And one final note on the game in Denver: Jason Pierre-Paul finally showed up. Man got his money. Disappeared for five games, and here he is: three sacks. Good for JPP. And any other notes on that before we move on and do a little Seattle preview?
No, the JPP thing was very, you know, kind of puzzling to me because he was unbelievable in the preseason
and healthy.
Mm-hmm. And healthy. And, you know, I don't, and then the past few weeks he struggled. I mean, I think one of the issues, it's very under the radar, but the Giants have not done a good enough job at getting, you know, pass rush depth behind, yep, Olivier Vernon.
It's part of the reason they were both injured last year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think Kerry Wynn is a really good player. And I think a lot of Giants fans don't really understand that you need a Kerry Wynn to win in the NFL.
Right.
He's a guy who is an undrafted guy. He doesn't cost a tremendous amount of money. He's a strong run defender. He can, if he's kind of bull rushing you, he can get a push. He's a good locker room guy. You need him. I think Avery Moss, I think, has potential. I know a lot of people, I talked to one guy who said, this guy could have been a second round pick, you know, something like that, if he had stayed at Nebraska and not gotten in trouble and everything. And I guess he had some injuries, you know, when he was in Youngstown State, but he thought he had kind of like, you know, day two talent and it's day three pick. But I mean, he's coming along, which is understandable. He's a fifth round pick, small school, kind of getting used to the thing. I mean, Romeo Okwara is hurt now. I think his year has kind of was a disappointment before the injury. I just think maybe the Giants haven't seen enough progress out of him. And look, I think expectations may have been set a little bit too high for Okwara, just simply because he goes out there and has that sensational first game on Sunday Night Football against the Cowboys. You gotta understand, he still was an undrafted guy. But yeah, I just think that's one of the issues they've had, you know, the workload, and, you know, especially JPP being out there for all those snaps in Philly when it was like 100 degrees out, yep. Going to Tampa. I mean, you know, Devin Taylor and just not working out. I mean, it wasn't the Giants' fault. I mean, there's a reason why Devin Taylor, who was, you know, a 6'7", you know, guy with 15 career sacks, was doesn't have a job. I mean, that's not really on the Giants, but yeah, I just think that that's one of the things they've got to find a way in the offseason, and maybe they think Moss will be this. They've got to add a third guy who can go in there and there not be a major drop off if they take JPP and OB out.
Yeah, I really like Avery Moss a lot. I think outside of Wayne Gallman, that was probably my favorite pick for the Giants. I'm anxious to see him this Sunday. I know with you know, obviously Aquara gone for the season and Vernon kind of still being, you know, dealing with the ankle. I'm anxious to see how Avery Moss does this Sunday against a very bad Seattle offensive line. But yeah, I'm with you. Third down pass rusher. They don't really have one. They don't have an OCU Manura. And that's the one thing that's kind of killed them last year and it's killing them again. They don't have somebody they can bring in on third down whose job is to just beat the offensive lineman in front of you and get to the quarterback. And, you know, it's again, it's one of those things where it's like you fail to address it until late in the draft. I mean, you tried with Devin Taylor, but, I mean, can't really call that a attempt to fix an issue, you know?
Throwing up a Hail Mary.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the Seattle game. Giants, I believe, are 6-point dogs. Seattle coming across country. It is an afternoon game, though. Maybe one of the other teams that can rival the Giants in how bad their offensive line is, basically pulling guys off the street. What are going to be some of the keys? Obviously, the defensive line is going to need to step up. But again, Russell Wilson, mobile quarterback. So one of the reasons why they don't necessarily need to focus on the offensive line as much. They don't really have much of a run game. Doug Baldwin hasn't been all that impressive this season. And to be quite honest, guys, I am I don't want to say optimistic about the Giants' odds, but I would say 2-5 is, you know, in my opinion, not a great scenario in terms of, you know, tanking for a pick. But I think it's entirely possible. So I will I'll defer to Weiss first, and then James, you take it.
I mean, there's no optimism for me here. Yeah. I mean, this is a copycat league. Seattle knows what the Giants did last week to Denver. They know what's coming. They have the guys on defense to, you know, sort of shut down what's left of the Giants receiving corps. And Evan Engram, look, he'll get some touches, he'll make some plays. But again, Seattle has athletic linebackers who can cover. Not saying they can cover him, but they can sort of contain him. And, you know, the offensive line, I think James said it. I mean, at some point it's going to get exposed, and it most likely will be against the Seahawks. It's going to be a long, long afternoon for the Giants. I don't see them having a chance in this game. Their defense might make a play, might get some sacks, but Russell Wilson is a lot better than Trevor Siemian. And you know, Seattle has ways to, even with their offensive line deficiencies, they still have success running the football. So I think Seattle is going to win this game. It's really not going to be a competitive game. But what do you think, James?
I have this feeling it's going to be a competitive game. I just think, look, I think you're absolutely right. Russell Wilson's going to be a problem for them. I think that when I look at this game, the mismatch between the Seahawks secondary and the Giants receivers is just like enormous. I mean, I guess Richard Sherman's going to go line up against
Roger Lewis.
I mean, you know, but then again, like last week, I was sitting thinking, all right, so we're going to see Aqib Talib versus Roger Lewis. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, so I think in that sense, it's going to simplify what the Seahawks have to do. And as I said, if Shepard plays, if I were Giants, I would not have him out there. Just I take it slow. But, I mean, you know, you're going to double team. You know, one of the things I'm intrigued to see is, you know, Shane Vereen, I think, had 12 snaps last week. You know, could they maybe get him a little bit more involved, try to use him in some way? But I just think it's going to come down to defense is going to have to make some plays. They're going to have to force some turnovers, and they're going to have to, you know, I think it might be easy to say the rest of the season, Giants have to score on special teams or on defense to have a chance in the game. Did it last week, and you know, maybe they can do it again this week, but I think it'll be close. I just think the Giants, they've got a little bit of, you know, pep in their step. I think they're playing at home. I think they keep it close. I think Seattle wins, but I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I could see it definitely being one of those games where Seattle controls it from start to finish, but the Giants make some play down the stretch, and they lose, you know, they lose by five or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the only good part about the Seattle offense is Russell Wilson. I mean, they haven't had a consistent running back since Marshawn Lynch. They have a bunch of no-names at wide receiver, and let's not forget, you know, despite the first 5 weeks, the Giants secondary is very, very good. You know, they're going to have Jack Rabbit. They're going to have Landon Collins. Eli Apple had a great game. He's coming off a great game. So, you know, anything that the Seahawks offense accomplishes is going to be on the back of Russell Wilson. Again, coming across country, they're playing away. This game is going to be, I think, way closer than you're giving it credit for, Weiss. You know, time will tell, obviously. But I agree with James where I do think the Seahawks win, but it'll be the Giants making one big play somewhere that keeps it close. I don't really see the Seahawks offense doing too much in the Meadowlands.
Well, I'm not going to say it's like when I say blowout, I don't, everyone thinks it's going to be like 35-0 or 27-0. No. I think it'll be like what you saw week one. You know, the Giants were in there, one possession, two possession game, you know, but ultimately they're in it, but they were never really in it. And I think that's what you're going to see here. Seattle will control this game from start to finish. They'll win. Their defensive line will chew the Giant offensive line up. And, you know, it's going to be a rough night. And I think, listen, Eli did a good job protecting against Denver. But again, I think, listen, it's a copycat league. I'm sure Seattle is going to be ready to go and understands that, look, we're not going to fall into the same trap Denver did. I can't see them kind of being in this game throughout and, you know, going toe to toe and scoring points. I don't see that at all. I think it's going to be like a 19-6, you know, 20-6.
I think we're looking at like 13-10, maybe.
Yeah. I think the big fear the Giants have to have is that this is a Seattle team that's coming out of the bye. They beat the Rams before the bye, and they just basically are like, all right, it's time for us to go now. And they come out and they play their best game of the season, and they just pummel the Giants, and it's like 28-7 or something. I think that's like the worst case scenario for the Giants. I don't think it's necessarily going to happen, but I do think, you know, eventually playing all these teams coming off their bye is going to hurt the Giants. And at some point, they're going to get a team that comes in off their bye and basically just says, all right, here we go. Like, we're going to take off and play our best game of the season. And that could overwhelm the Giants, especially on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get some predictions for the game on Sunday. I'll go first. I will say, I'm going to alter my score prediction. I'll say Seattle 17, Giants 6. I don't think they score a touchdown.
Someone go ahead, else. James. You're the guest.
I will say the Giants, Seahawks win. I got to remember this because when I got NJ.com, I have to stick with this score. One score across the board. I will say the Seahawks win 24-19. And I will say that the Giants will have another defensive score somehow, 2 weeks in a row.
All right. I like it.
I'm going to go. I think it'll be 19-10. I think the Giants will get a score somehow. But again, it'll be Seattle controlling throughout. This one is not going to be pretty for the Giants. I don't see how they can somehow stay in this game. And even if Seattle scores under 20 points, I think the Giants will score under 10 or under. And I just don't see it. Yeah, but you're very generous with that 19 points. I don't know if you're just doing that because we're Giant fans, James.
No, I think that, you know, I don't know. It's 19 points to me. It seems like a good number. I just, you know, normally in these types of games, I'll be like what Ethan said, like, oh, you know, 13-10. And all of a sudden, like, I'll look up and it's like 13-10 within like the first 5 minutes of the game. You're like, oh, okay. So, yeah, 24-19. I don't know why. That's a number. I think the line at NJ.com in our pick was like 5.5.
Yeah, it's down to 4.5 at this point. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, people pumping the giant lever in Vegas. But, yeah, I just kind of go off that. And then 24-19 sounds about right. You know, I mean, if they score a defensive touchdown, that could be 4 field goals from Aldrick Rosas. I mean, that could be. So, yeah, it might be a little bit too high, but I'll say 24-19.
All right.
I think the one thing about Seattle is Seattle really doesn't get going until, you know, the middle of the season. So I think this could be the game where they sort of put their foot on the gas and they'll just run all over us.
Yeah, I will be taking Seattle -4.5 as well as the under 40. That's going to be the play for the degenerates listening out there. Mm-hmm. All right, let's finish up. Weiss, James, I don't know if you listen, but the way we usually end episodes is Weiss always has something. I don't want to say random, but just another topic that he likes to talk about, and I'm more than happy to engage with him in the conversation. So, Weiss, you got anything for us this week?
How about those Yankees?
Oh, get out of here!
One win away from the World Series.
People on Twitter think I'm trying to do the whole reverse jinx thing. I've literally come to terms with the fact that it's going to be the 2017 World Series champion New York Yankees. I could not be more miserable. People on Twitter remind me every day Michael Conforto is dead and the Yankees are going to win the World Series. So I am not a happy camper right now. James, I don't know. Are you a Yankee fan?
I grew up a Yankee fan. I'll be honest with you. Sir. Get in this business, the fan part of your brain kind of
turns off.
I mean, you're still a fan of your college. You went to University of South Carolina, Final Four. So that was kind of a big deal.
That was amazing.
It was. It was for a guy who covered a really, really, really bad basketball team for the student paper that at home.
Yeah.
It was something else. But back to the Yankees. I don't, you know, pay as much attention to them, but it just seems like they're a really fun team.
It's a team of destiny. They're a team of destiny.
But the Los Angeles Dodgers also seem to be a team of destiny.
If it winds up being them, they're going to get destroyed by the Yankees.
I think it's going to be the Dodgers, but I think this is Game 6 is going to be big because if Verlander beats them, Game 7, anything can happen in Game 7. So, but I just think that, there just seems more of an energy around the area when the Yankees are like this. And I think that there are certain teams in sports. I mean, I kind of experienced it last year. Only my third year covering the NFL, but when the Cowboys are, like, really good, there's just a buzz. I mean, when you're covering the NFL, it doesn't exist otherwise. And I just think that there's a buzz living in this area when the Yankees are making a deep run. So it's fun. And I think that, I'm sure a lot of giant Yankee fans like it because, the Giants, get another kind of week or two and kind of, somewhat anonymity when the Yankees are pushing the World Series. And all of a sudden, these Yankee fans, season's going to be over, parade's over, and they're like, oh, and the Giants are, 1-6, whatever they are.
I think it's great for Major League Baseball. I mean, I'm not really as big of a baseball fan as I am football and basketball, but just to have their four largest markets in their Final Four, I think it's huge for baseball. Star-studded Final Four, and I think it's no matter what the combination is for the World Series, it's looking like Dodgers Yankees, but you can't ask for a better postseason if you're Major League Baseball. In my opinion, I mean, it's just been great all the series, outside of maybe the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. All have been a lot of fun and a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Listen, two good markets, both coasts, budding stars. You got Bellinger, then you got Judge, Gary. Didi's not a budding star, but he's still a star. Some great pitching matchups. I mean, MLB couldn't be happier, and I couldn't be more miserable.
I'll tell you one thing, though. I know Houston's a big TV market, but they do not want the Houston Astros.
Yeah, their fan base is garbage.
Outside of Houston, I've never met an Astros fan in my life.
First off, I don't know about you guys, but the idea that the Houston Astros are in the American League, I can't stand it. And it would be one thing if they weren't good and they just were kind of there. But the fact that the Astros have a young club that's good and they're probably going to be around for a while.
Right.
I mean, eventually they're going to represent the American League in the World Series. And it just feels – and especially if they played the Cubs in the World Series. I mean, it would be like, oh, this is like MLB – like, I loved baseball as a kid. I still love the game. But I just feel like MLB has done a lot of stupid things.
Very.
I mean, this interleague all year round is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wish the interleague would just go away, period. I don't understand why the Houston Astros in the American League. I mean, you could have moved the Rockies to the American League. You could have moved the Diamondbacks. You could have brought the Brewers back. But to put the Astros, it's bad. And I just – but not to get on a little rant there. I mean, the one-game wild card, I'm okay with it. But, you know, it's just – I just think that putting the Astros in the American League was a bad, bad decision. And if the Astros were representing the American League in the World Series against the Cubs, a team they were in a division with and played 19 meaningless games a year with only a couple of years ago, it just would not be good for ratings. I don't care how big Houston is. They need the Yankees in the World Series. And, hey, if the Yankees – whoever wins the National League, that is going to be the highest-rated World Series ever. So
absolutely. Happy. I think the one thing about the Astros is it's a good story because of what happened in Houston with the hurricane. But, yeah, Major League Baseball, I mean, they are rooting for the Yankees to get to that World Series. And they will get there tomorrow night, I promise. Book it. There's my prediction. You want something to leave the episode happy with? The Yankees will win tomorrow.
No, they will. It won't just be a win. They're gonna shellack them.
I knew the Yankees were going to the World Series when they finally got over the Dallas Keuchel hump. When they finally got Dallas Keuchel, I said we're going to the World Series.
Book it,
and we are. Book it.
All right, that's it. Episode 40. Any parting words?
Thanks for coming on, James. Appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me. You know, just follow me on Twitter. Giants yep. fans, reach out. Love to hear from the fans. It's been a wild couple of weeks. This team's never boring.
Never.
I can say that. They are never boring.
No, they're not.
Never. Yep. So, guys, go follow James on Twitter at James Cratch. Check him out, NJ.com. James, again, thank you. This won't be the last time you're on. I can promise the viewers that. Unless you start to hate us for some reason. But we'd love to have you back. So that's it. Episode 40 in the books. Thanks for tuning in. We'll speak to you guys next week. Peace.